Welcome to the Three Creeks Church podcast. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, we're glad you're here with us. Today's message comes from a series called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. A great enemy of the spiritual life in our day is the fact that we're always in a hurry to do everything. The world tells us that we have to move faster. But when you look at the life of Jesus, he moved slower than that. Maybe he was onto something. Let's find out what God has to say about hurry. Thanks for joining us.
Last Thanksgiving, so a little over a year ago, I went to Canada and I sat down on my buddy's couch, and on the coffee table next to it, there was a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's an orange book and kind of caught my eye, so I picked it up and I just started reading it. I don't read that much. I try to read some, but I don't read that much. And in just a few days on our little Thanksgiving break in Canada, I don't know if this was the point, but I hurried through the book and I read the whole thing front to back. And I laughed out loud and I cried a few times. Most of the time, my jaw was just kind of like this, like, I was overwhelmed because I felt like he was talking about me. Like I felt like he was in my head. And I felt like this guy that wrote this book named John Mark Comer, I felt like it was putting words to how I felt. And I was overwhelmed. And I was excited to share. And so that was the moment that my personal journey to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from my life, that's when it began. It's still underway, but that's when it began. So I came back, this is November, and then I came back, and in December, so a little over a year ago, I'm sketching out like all the 2020 message series that we're going to do at Three Creeks. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out when to fit which series, what are we going to do in the summer, what are we going to do next Christmas. We try to plan out, and I'm pretty sure that in March, I had sketched out the ruthless elimination of hurry, March 2020, so 9 months ago. And I was excited. I felt like this is something that everybody needs to hear. It's been impactful for my life. And so I showed my wife, Morgan. I said, "Morg, what do you think? I mean, this is pretty good, right?" And she goes, "Mm-mm." And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, this is so good. Like, everybody's got to hear this. And she goes, "You haven't lived it long enough to teach it." Okay. She's a wonderful woman, and she's so honest, and she was so right. But the truth is, I still don't feel like I've lived it long enough to teach it, but it's got to come out at some point. And so as we do this four-week series called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, I just want you to know that I'm positioning myself not as the professor of the class, but rather someone who has signed up for the class. I'm very interested in the class. I'm going to sit in the front row of the class. And this is me kind of inviting you to take this with me. I haven't figured this out. If anybody that knows me knows that I'm on this journey, but I'm just getting started, I'm essentially asking you to just go on this journey with me of ruthlessly eliminating hurry from our lives and the implications that that could have on a relationship with God. That's really what this is about. This is not a TED talk on time management. This is me caring deeply about your soul. If the pace of your life is incompatible with a deep relationship with God, I care deeply about this. So I just to prove the point that we're all in a hurry, I just thought of a couple of things that let me just say one more thing about 2020 specifically. I've ran this series by a couple of people, and there's this feeling of like, you know, we all want to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives, but 2020 kind of eliminated a lot of it for us, right? Like a lot of our lives, it feels like it's been on pause, and it wasn't even our choice. So I recognize there's people in the room kind of all over the place on this spectrum of feeling like you're in a hurry a lot, feeling this kind of underlying feeling of anxiousness, like there's not enough time to do all that I've signed up to do. Some of us have just experienced like our lives stopping. We've been in the house for 6 months and you're like, I want to pick up the pace, you know? And then there's some people, like people that work for Zoom and people that sell camping gear, and people that sell treadmills, your year was nuts. Maybe there's somebody in the room where your external life has been forced to slow down, but your heart hasn't, and your heart rate hasn't, and actually maybe you still feel like this frantic feeling. Maybe it's withdrawal. Maybe you're addicted to speed and getting stuff done. You want the world to pick back up, right? So I get it. So there's people kind of all over the place on this. Maybe this series is perfect for where you're at. Maybe as I share some of what Jesus says about hurry, you're going to go, wow, that is meeting me today. Maybe this is the perfect time to do this series because it is a fair warning that in 2021, Lord willing, the world will pick up the pace, but maybe you don't have to. Maybe there's a slower, better, more Christ-like way to live your life, a healthier way to live your life, a way to live your life that would be remarkably conducive to a deep relationship with God. Let me just take a minute to, if you're not already convinced, convince you, or at least try to, that we're all in a hurry. When the light turns green and we are the second car and they don't go for 1 second, maybe two, we just honk the horn a little bit. Like, hey, gotta get going, right? I mean, am I the only one? When we go to the grocery store, we look up and down the checkout lanes and we try to find the one that has the fewest people in it. And if all the lanes have two people, we go, whew, this is going to be a wait. This is going to take over 5 minutes, right? We don't really call anybody anymore. That takes too much time. And so we text them. And now, rather than texting, we do the thumbs up thing or the heart. We don't have time to write out a sentence, and they don't have time to read it. Why would we do that to them? Right? We rarely do puzzles. Maybe you did one over Christmas, but we don't do them all the time. We don't read poetry. Maybe you do, but most of us don't. We don't have time to walk our pets. When someone asks us how we're doing, a common answer is, good, just busy. And we say that like it's okay. We almost say it like it's a badge of honor, like I have good work ethic, right? We say, good, just busy, got a lot going on, life's crazy. People used to send letters to one another in our country via horseback. And then like 7 days before Christmas, our country flipped because the USPS wasn't delivering things when they said that they would. Amazon is now delivering your groceries within 2 hours of you ordering them. Somebody try to tell me we're not in a hurry. Two hours. It's going to come on a drone, and they're doing it to keep us happy so we don't take our business elsewhere. Right? So we're in this. And pastors and people, churches, we're not the only people talking about this. Mental health professionals, psychologists are now labeling this like a modern epidemic, and they call it hurry sickness. As like it's a disease. It's a disease that we are so much in a hurry. They define it in two different ways. The first one is this. It's a behavior pattern characterized by continual rushing and anxiousness. And here's another one. A malaise in which a person feels chronically short of time and so tends to perform every task faster and to get flustered when encountering any kind of delay. Is there any chance that you might have hurry sickness? Well, the way to figure out if you have a disease is to try to figure out if you have the symptoms. We're kind of used to that process by now this year, right? And so the author of this book, and I agree with this list, he lays out 10 symptoms of hurry sickness. And I just want to lay them out there for you. And then you get to decide if you think you might be sick. And I will just tell you on the front end that I have at least 9 of these, maybe 10. And I'm working on it. But this it's not fun to read. It's kind of exposing. It's kind of embarrassing for me to read. But if I think about it, it's going, man, this would be healthy to at least identify, like, do I have these symptoms of this hurry sickness? The first symptom is irritability. You get mad or frustrated or annoyed far too easily. Little things irk you. People feel the need at times to tiptoe around you. And a word of advice from somebody who really struggles with this one is don't look at how you treat people you work with or people you live near. Look at the people that you're the closest to and consider how you treat them, your spouse, your children, or your roommate. Irritability. Number two, hypersensitivity. Minor comments hurt your feelings, and a grumpy email can set you off. All it takes is a little turn of events to kind of throw you for a loop and ruin your day. Minor things turn into kind of major emotional events for you. You don't really like getting feedback because you just kind of constantly take it as criticism. You're just really sensitive. Ordinary problems that a lot of us experience have a disproportionate effect on your emotional well-being, and you just don't roll with the punches very well. Anybody else? Restlessness. You like the idea of sitting down and reading a book. You like the idea of reading poetry. You like the idea of praying. But as soon as you try to sit down, you can't relax. You think it sounds nice, but when you sit down to try to do something like that, you can't help but looking at the clock or looking at your phone. And when you spend time with God, it can feel boring and you can't focus. Anybody else? Nonstop activities. Number four, you go, go, go. You're kind of addicted to getting stuff done. And this can come in the form of careerism or house cleaning or running errands. And this one burns the most whenever you get home from doing it all and then you give the scraps to the people that you love the most. Like the people that you love the most, your family, the people that you live with, they get the tired, worn out, what time can I go to bed version of you. This next one, number six, emotional numbness. You don't feel like you have the capacity to really feel somebody else's pain. Like even if somebody close to you gets bad news, you feel sad that you don't feel sadder about it. Like you shoot them a text, but the next week you kind of forget to even check in. And you feel bad about that. Real empathy is a rare feeling for you. Out of order priorities. You feel disconnected to your identity and your calling. You just are constantly trying to do whatever feels urgent. And so all the stuff that you said that you would do, you know, last week or last month or last year, you just don't get to it because you say you just didn't have time for it. Your priorities are out of order. Lack of care for your body. You don't even do the basic stuff. You don't sleep 8 hours a night. You don't eat healthy. You don't exercise daily, so you put on weight. You're tired all the time. You get sick a couple times a year, and you really need coffee. Like, you need it. Number eight, escapist behaviors. When we're too tired to actually do what's life-giving for our souls, we turn to a distraction of choice. We scroll social media, we overeat, we overdrink, we watch Netflix, we look at porn. We say we're gonna charge our phone in the other room, but it lasts for like a night or maybe not even one. We think it's a good idea. We make mistakes and hide them even though we know they're full-blown addictions. Number nine, a slippage of just spiritual disciplines. People that, you know, in here would say that you're a Christian. There's kind of a list of spiritual disciplines that we know are healthy for us. They actually make us feel alive. They make us feel awake and ready to take on the day. But reading our Bibles and prayer and memorizing scripture and church and group, they just get cut. And the last one is isolation. If you're just honest, you just kind of feel disconnected to God. You feel disconnected to God. You try to sit down and have time with him, but you don't really view him as a friend because you don't feel like you've really spent a whole lot of time with him recently, so you don't feel connected. And then that actually, you know, overflows. You actually feel relatively disconnected to other people, to your family or your friends. Your mind's somewhere else when you're with people. Anybody else? I feel like I just drug us through a swamp. You know? Anybody else? Here's why this matters so much to me. And here's why I believe this should matter so much to you, is that all my worst moments are when I'm in a hurry. All my worst moments are when I'm in a hurry. My worst moments as a husband are when I'm in a hurry. My worst moments as a dad, it's when I'm in a hurry. My worst moments as a pastor, it's when I'm in a hurry. My worst moment as a Christian, as a human, it's when I'm in a hurry. I think about like my family getting ready to go somewhere in the car. How many times I say hurry up to my children? Hurry up and get your socks on. Hurry up and get your shoes on. Hurry up and get your coat on. Hey, hurry up, out the door. Hurry up, get in the car. Hurry up, buckle in. I'm just ashamed at myself and how often I'm telling my children, they're 4, 2, and 1, to hurry up. My worst moments, when at night, we put our kids to bed around 7 and they know all the tricks to get it to 7:30, right? I mean, they know. There's like a list of things. I'm at my worst when I'm trying to hurry them to bed. They ask if they can brush their teeth, and I say, if you hurry up. What do we got to do that's so important that they can't take an extra minute to suck on their toothbrush? They go in their room, Dad, can we read a book? Okay, yeah, grab one. I hope it's one with cardboard pages. If I don't know that book, I hope that when I open to the first page that the font is big. I can't wait to... Why? It makes me want to cry. What am I doing, man? Like, what do I got to do after the... What could possibly be more important? And then this one, this is the one that I've just been thinking about for months. My kids go, you know, they've got their thing, sing a song, pray, whatever. And I don't know why. Sometimes I'm like, I'm trying to like sneak out tonight, not do those. But I'm about to close the door and they say, Dad, pray. My kids want to pray with me. And I go over and I go, all right, dear Jesus, no bad dreams. Thanks for a good day. Amen. All right, hey, go to bed. Go to bed. You know, and I go and I shut the door. It's like, what could I possibly have to do in all of my life that would be more important than spending 3 minutes praying with my kids? Come on, man. It's just crazy. And I don't know if you feel exactly how I do. I don't know if those examples, like if they click for you, if you have kids or whatever, but like, I would propose that maybe the worst moments, your worst moments are when you're in a hurry. It's when you're in a hurry. And it's not all of our fault, because the world has picked up the pace. It's like we were running on a treadmill and somebody just keeps hitting the button that we got to go faster and faster. And you're like, even if you are trying to slow down, it's hard. Let me just give you a brief history of speed. In 1370, they erected the first public clock in Cologne, Germany. It was the first time that man began to be mastered at all times by the clock. Our bodies, rather than going with the sun, we started going with the clock. You know what I'm saying? Now we're hardly ever anywhere where we can't tell you what time it is in 3 seconds. Like when we have a moment when we're like, we didn't even know what time it was. That's like a special event, right? We turned off our phone for 3 hours. In 1879, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, which made it possible to stay up past sunset. When Thomas Edison invented the light bulb 150 years ago, people slept an average of 11 hours a night. Now people sleep an average of 7 hours a night. Does anybody want to know why we're so tired? In the 50s, everything closed at 6 o'clock on weekdays and nothing was open on Sunday. And 7-Eleven came to town. 7 days a week, open till 11 p.m. That's like nothing now. Like, what's not 24 hours? We kind of think, you know, Chick-fil-A took like a vow of poverty to close on Sunday, right? Have things changed? In 2007, iPhones, anybody with an email address, including my mom, could get Facebook, Twitter, all the things. The technology boom started in 2007. And now we can't hardly imagine our lives without something that didn't exist when I was a freshman in college. So the pace has picked up. The pace has picked up. But it's easy to assume that this new pace is normal, but what if it's not? And what if hurry is the great enemy of the spiritual life in our day? And the question I want to ask you as a pastor is, what could this pace be doing to our souls? Could the pace, could it be incompatible with a deep connection with God? This is not a series about slowing down. This is a series about slowing down enough that you could have a real relationship with God. I do not care about your calendar or your schedule or your to-do list or how much you get done until it gets to the point where that lifestyle is incompatible with a relationship with God, and all of a sudden, I just became very concerned as your pastor. So as a church, I just want to usher us into this question of, what is this pace doing to our souls, and is the pace at which we're living life, is it conducive to walking with Jesus? To walk with Jesus is to walk in a slow, unhurried pace. And you cannot walk well with Jesus if you're sprinting through life always in a hurry. You can't do it. You can't do it. And Jesus spoke about it. And I want to take the last few minutes of my message here tonight to tell you something Jesus said about hurry. He had a whole group of people in front of him, and they were trying to figure out how to live life. They were just eaten out of his hand at this point. He had already done some miracles, and they were like, what is this guy going to say next? And Jesus talks about hurry and the pace of life and what it might look like to follow Jesus. This is what Jesus says in Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Then Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Look what Jesus said in verse 30. He goes, for my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. You and I, when we think about Jesus, we think maybe about baby Jesus, or maybe you immediately picture Jesus on the cross, Jesus coming back from the dead, Jesus is coming back again. But people that heard this, Jesus was a miracle worker, and he was kind of a traveling teacher. We think Jesus, like God or Savior or Son of God, they just thought remarkable teacher. They called him Rabbi. That was the name that people would address Jesus as, Rabbi. And Jesus says, my yoke is easy. It's a first century farming term. It's obviously kind of lost on you and I because, I mean, you might grow some vegetables, but I don't know. You're probably not a farmer. You're not yoking your oxen, are you? So it's kind of lost on us, but to them, that made sense. It made sense because they're all living in this agrarian society, and Jesus says, my yoke is easy. Every rabbi had a yoke. This is a common term. Every rabbi had a yoke. A yoke was simply that teacher's set of teachings on how to live life, on how to bear the weight of life. And Jesus said, my yoke is an easy one. The burden I give you is light. What does that mean? This is what Jesus is saying. He goes, guys, listen. He's saying it to them, but it's the same for us. He goes, listen, life can feel heavy, man. Life can feel heavy. And there is an emotional weight to it. And if you don't agree, you're in junior high or something. Like you have, you know what I'm saying? Like anybody that's getting, you know, you went to school, or maybe you went to college, maybe you went to grad school, maybe you got a job, maybe you started a career, maybe you got a mortgage, maybe you got a marriage, maybe you started having children, maybe your children are getting older and beginning to navigate high school or their own marriage. Listen, life isn't getting easier. I think anybody that's older than me would say, yeah, it doesn't change. There's an emotional weight of life. This is what Jesus is saying. And at times, if we're not careful, being a follower of Jesus can feel like another weight added on top of it. We go, man, I'm already so busy. I can't join a group. I'm already so busy. I can't serve on a team. I can't. I mean, you want me to read my Bible and pray and memorize I can't. And Jesus is going, wait. My yoke is easy. This is what Jesus is saying. In the same way that they would take two oxen and would put a yoke on two of them, it's a work instrument, and it's designed to help them bear the load. It's to help them disperse the weight. It's to help them to be able to stand up under it. And Jesus is saying, my yoke is easy. He's going, hey, I've got a yoke. Here, tuck in here. Tuck in here by me. Match the pace of your life to mine. Let me do the heavy lifting. Tuck in here. My yoke, I think if you do it, and if you adopt my lifestyle, and if you adopt my pace, I think you'll find that my yoke is easy. The hardest way to follow Jesus is to live like everybody else in your apartment complex, everybody else in your neighborhood, everybody else that you work with. Live just like them. Don't change your schedule. Don't change your calendar. Don't change how you spend your money. And just try to add Jesus into that. It's the hardest way to follow Jesus. You're going to fail. It's so difficult to follow Jesus running at the pace. The easiest way, the easy yoke, the easiest way to follow Jesus is to adopt the lifestyle and the pace and the habits and the teachings of Jesus and actually live differently than other people. All these guys that I've been reading about as I've studied for this message, for this series, they call this thing the secret of the easy yoke. The secret of the easy yoke is to live like Jesus did, to have the habits that Jesus modeled for us, and you will find, oh man, I don't have to add Christianity into the list of things that I do. It has just become who I am, and I have found rest for my soul. Jesus didn't give an escape. He gave equipment, a yoke. He gave equipment to handle the weight of life. He says, tuck in here. I think you'll find that it's easy. For the next 3 weeks of the series that are going to be online, and hopefully, you know, maybe you can get in a group and watch it with a group of people, or if not, you can watch it online. The next 3 weeks are going to be these practices of Jesus, these habits of Jesus, this lifestyle of Jesus. It's going to be practical. You're going to have the chance to potentially implement them into your life. And then through that, you would be ruthlessly eliminating hurry from your life. I think you and I both know that if you try to tweak a couple of things, I don't know how much progress you're going to make. If you just change a little thing here or there, this series is called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And things might really have to change. But I think that if we had a one-on-one conversation and if I asked you, do you want them to? I think you'd say yes. And so what hangs in the balance is the health of our relationships with God. I'm going to close with this. Eugene Peterson took the original text, that Jesus said. This same passage, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burden. And Eugene Peterson took that original text and he translated the words of Jesus. And I want you to receive these last words that I'm going to read as Jesus talking to you. I don't want you to think about them as words in the Bible. I want you to think about them as Jesus speaking to you where you're at. This is the way Eugene Peterson translated what Jesus says. He says, are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Jesus says, get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Keep company with me, and you will learn to live freely and lightly. It sounds nice. The skeptical person in the room doesn't believe it's possible. I'm here to tell you, it is. It is when we match, when we walk with me and work with me, watch how I do it. That's what Jesus said. If you want to experience the easy yoke, the light burden, to walk, to live freely and lightly, then we've got to look at the life of Jesus and go, how did he do it? And do it like him. I think there's a better life available to us. Let me pray for you. Father, I pray for our church. I pray for anybody here. I pray for anybody watching online, anybody that just feels overwhelmed or anxious or frantic or like there's not enough time. I pray that your peace would come over their life. I pray that your grace would just permeate into their life, that they would forgive themselves for overcommitting themselves. For anybody in the room or watching that feels like everything is going so fast, I pray, God, that you would help it to slow down. I pray, Father, for somebody in here who's going, my life isn't even going that fast. I pray they would heed your warning. And as the world picks up speed, I pray that we would not. I pray we could match our pace to your pace. We cannot abide with you in a hurry, God. We're not gonna enjoy friendship with you if we're rushing through it, God. Would you help us not just to externally but internally slow down? I pray, Father, for myself that I would stop and pray with my kids. Pray you would just give me the wherewithal to stop. I don't want to skim life, God. I want to live it. Pray, God, you would help me and help us. We want our lives to be conducive and helpful in following you. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Three Creeks Church, community groups, serving on a team, or giving online, visit threecreekschurch.com.